Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Isabella Garrido, Jaya Kumar, and Abyaz Karim. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. After announcing the festival would be folding in the first week of 2025, Kingston Writers Fest is now hoping to return for a 17th season in fall 2025. The festival sent out a message in January citing ongoing financial challenges as the downfall of the event, running in a deficit even with a scaled-down festival in 2024. However, with the launch of a fundraising campaign on February 1st, the festival may have a second chance. The festival's co-founder, Marilyn Simons, who served as artistic director from 2009 to 2014, stepped back into the spotlight this January to address the financial difficulties, launching an angel campaign. Simons described the events in an interview with CFRC.
I was artistic director from 2009 to 2014. My goal was to start the festival and to make it financially stable. But my real life is as a writer, so I left it at that point and stayed engaged as an audience member and certainly presented all my books there. In January, I became engaged with the festival again in an attempt to solve some of its financial problems that arose last year.
I was wondering if you could speak a bit about this angel campaign and how that came to be after the announcement that Writers Fest was folding.
You know, like everyone, I received the same sort of public announcement that everyone did, and you know, I sat around mourning for a little bit because this was our baby. And then I thought, well, heck, maybe there's something we can do. And so I called up Jan Walter, who was my co-founder with the festival, and the current chair, and Justin Conitis, who's a longtime supporter of the festival. And together we decided that we would mount an angel campaign, that we figured out how much was owing and how much we needed to raise. And at the same time, CRA decided that because of the postal strike, they were extending the deadline for 2024 charitable receipts till the end of February. So we started a one-month campaign, and basically we just called up all the supporters of the festival that we could think of, and the response was just, oh, it was so gratifying. One of the writers that we had, we were the first festival to showcase her, and you know, she wrote and said she would never forget that, and she gave us money. Lots of people all across Canada donated funds and became angels. So it was within a couple of weeks we had enough money to start paying back, to start meeting the debts of Kingston Writers Fest, and now almost all of those debts are covered. We have some more money coming in March, and when that comes in, we will have retired all of the debts.
While covering 2024 debts was the original goal of the campaign, Simon says Writers Fest is now focused on rebuilding.
The enthusiasm was huge, and that itself was extremely not only satisfying, but invigorating for those of us who were working on this. We realized that, like us, people in the community really, really valued this festival, as did writers and publishers across the country. So that gave us the motivation to do the work, the second stage of the work, which is, the first stage was making, you know, sort of clearing the debt. The second stage is to rebuilding. And the third stage will be to plan the next step. And we're considering many things. Most importantly, a summer reading series and a somewhat reconfigured festival in the fall.
that soon in September 2025, you think Writers Fest could be coming back?
Yeah, because, I mean, what a lot of people don't realize is that when we started this festival in 2009, we had our first meeting on March 27th. And on September 25th, we opened the doors to a festival with over 30 events, and we had an audience of more than 3,000. So we know this can be done.
There's more fundraising ahead, but what else do we need to get Writers Fest back on its feet? What's next?
I think planning. Mm-hmm. We put together a really good board that has a tremendous amount of skill in financial management, legal, governance, strategic planning, risk management. And so it will be the board's job to lay the groundwork for the next festival so that it can be sustainable and continue on. This community really loves this festival. There are people who have been coming every year for 16 years. And there are new readers who are just discovering it. So the work now will be mostly behind the scenes. We'll be having other fund development campaigns. We'll be probably mounting a couple of fundraisers. We'll be applying for grants. We'll be doing all the, you know, all the usual things that festivals have to do in order to in order to give this gift of books to the community.
Simons also discussed the challenging landscape that put Writers Fest in jeopardy and what returning to the playing field could look like.
It's kind of a perfect storm of circumstances. COVID hit a lot of festivals of this size very hard, because people couldn't come out. So festivals had a variety of responses to that. Most of them had online events, but of course people don't pay for those, right? Mm-hmm. So you still have to keep your staff on, but you're not getting any money in. At the same time, a lot of the granting bodies reduced their grants. And people, I think a lot of festivals, their response to coming back to in-person events was to make their festival smaller, not be too ambitious. And unfortunately, with something like this, you need a certain size in order for the festival to be sustainable. So there were a lot of things that kind of conspired all at once to do this. And Kingston Writers Fest isn't alone. I just heard that the Toronto Festival of Authors is moving off out of Harbourfront and reconfiguring itself, you know, for many of the same reasons. And I know of other smaller festivals that are in the process of doing the same thing. I personally, I work with a festival in San Miguel in Mexico. I live here half the year. And I work with a tricultural festival here, which really struggled the last 3 years. And this year, people came back in droves. So all the events were sold out, and I'm talking 1,000-seat venues. And what was really interesting to me is that the demographic changed, is that there were far fewer, what I like to call Q-tips, whiteheads in the audience. The demographic, the age range was more people in midlife and younger. And so I think that encourages me a great deal for Kingston Writers Fest this fall, is I expect that the audiences will come out. It takes good programming too, and we're working on that. We have some fabulous ideas for programming. So I'm hoping that people will come out and we'll be able to develop a new audience of readers and writers.
The Angel campaign will continue as Writers Fest prepares for its comeback in September 2025. And Simons remains hopeful that Kingston's reading and writing community will be able to keep the festival afloat.
I discovered very early on when I was working on Kingston Writers Fest and developing it, is that we weren't developing a festival so much as we were developing a community. And I think that's the hugely satisfying part of Kingston Writers Fest, is that readers and writers come together to talk about ideas and books, and it's a book love fest, really. And, you know, as a writer, there's no place I'd rather be.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hello, folks. I'm Abiyaz from CFRC. Today, we will be conversing with a member of Queen's Aerospace Design Team, commonly known as QADT. This team always pushes the boundaries of aircraft design and drone technology. Leading the business side of this dynamic team is Nicholas. In this role, he has helped expand the team's reach, foster key sponsorships, and ensure a continued success of Queen's Aerospace Innovators. We have Mr. Nicholas with us in studio today, and we will be talking to him about aerospace industry and QADT. Hello, Nicholas. Thanks for joining us in studio today. Can you tell our audience a bit more about yourself, your background, your journey to aerospace and QADT?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Nico. I'm a fifth year computing student at Queen's University, and I'm currently the director of business in the Queen's Aerospace Design Team. For me, it was mostly my internship. I did an internship with Smith Engineering.
Right.
And working with Smith Engineering had me working a lot with students, and more specifically design teams that are started by students. I worked formerly with the Queen's Hyperloop Design Team, the Queen's Robotic Knights Team, the Queen's Space Engineering Team, Rocket Engineering Team, and more specifically, obviously, the Aerospace Design Team as well. And I always had a curiosity with aerospace. I've always been amazed about planes. I've always been very, very curious about how planes work as a kid. And as a young adult, going on a plane still amazes me how we've been able to engineer such a wonderful, large machine that's been able to transport us all around the world in much, much faster time than boats previously in the past. So I got interested in aerospace because of just my genuine interest in planes and my love for travel. It made logical sense, so I applied, and it's been a welcoming experience. They've been very, the Queen's Aerospace Design Team has always been very welcoming to me, and we've definitely done a lot. We've done a lot this year, and very happy to be a part of the team.
That sounds amazing. So when we were chatting off air, you told me that you're currently working as the business director. So can you tell our audience a bit about your transition into this specific role?
Sure. So the Queen's Aerospace Design Team is a little bit of a new team. So there was not necessarily a clear role of the business team prior to this year. So this year was my time really was setting a foundation for future business directors to have a really solid understanding and strong foundation so that we can get right back to work just where we started. So we organized a marketing team, a sponsorship team, and a logistics team to start off. And we've had, I think, more or less in between 10 to 20 members in our business team, which compared to other engineering design teams is actually quite formidably large. We have a partnership with the Queen's Space Engineering and Rocket Engineering Team, and also with the robotics teams and the biomedical engineering teams, because our business team is quite large, so we do try to support them. Other design teams who might have a bit smaller of a business team. But obviously, due to the university's financial struggles, sponsorships have been more of a priority to us because the university openly encourages external funding opportunities. And so we've been working to ensure that we can build some form of alumni list to connect with our former alumni from a decade ago so that we can keep in touch with them. And hopefully they can also send us donations. We've been also working with other external organizations to secure sponsorship deals alongside the Smith Engineering Advancement Team with the faculty.
Right.
And that's one thing regarding sponsorships and marketing. We've done a lot. We've been releasing new merch, new Instagram posts, new posts on the digital screens across campus, more specifically on the video wall currently as of March 6th, 2025. You can see our video wall ads on Beamish atrium, our central entry atrium. So anyways, we've done a lot in the marketing and the sponsorship side of things to have a clear designation of roles and an idea of what is supposed to be a business team. Yeah. Alongside obviously logistics and financing and accounting and everything else. So that's been a lot of my role. My role has been more about actually determining and essentially defining what it is to be a business team in an engineering-based design team.
Yeah, sounds like a challenging role. Okay, yeah. So if we dive into the operations of QADT, so I hear that you guys are all set to compete in Alberta, Florida, and Mexico next year. Can you share some more details about these competitions and what makes them exciting?
Sure. These competitions are competitions that we enroll ourselves in. We compete with other universities across North America, Canada, US, Mexico, of course, and also in some instances international. So European teams or teams coming from Asia, like for example, Turkey or even Southeast Asia and India, China, etc. So it's a wonderful opportunity, one, to network with other teams around the world and share and exchange ideas, which is great. Second of all, it's an opportunity to work with other domestic Canadian design teams.
Wow.
So that we can also do the exact same, compete with one another, exchange with one another. More specifically, a lot of the competitions right now is actually manufacturing and assembling drones for forest fires, forest firefighting.
Right.
So our drone, Night Fury Rift 1, is designed to fight forest fires. More specifically, is that it has become a bigger issue in Canada and also in the United States.
Right.
So we've been competing. Last year, actually, we ranked sixth overall and first in undergraduate design teams in our competition in London. And the other teams, for context, had master's students, PhD students. And we're all just undergraduate students in our instances, in our case,
right?
Who have very little experience compared to everyone else. So we're very proud of that result, and we're looking forward to this year's competitions. And I'm more than confident that we'll be doing just as good, if not better.
Wow. Tell us a bit about QADT's preparation phase for the competitions. Like, is there any key aspect or feature that the judges look for in these competitions?
Well, one big thing is obviously our drones. So we have to make sure our drone's up to standard, that we're doing everything in terms of safety protocols, that we're doing everything in our ability to ensure that our drone is performing at its best capacity. So that's one thing. We obviously have the technical side of things to ensure that our technical, our software, our electricity, our drone itself is ready for the competition. Secondly, of course, you have to make sure that our team is ready. Obviously, we're a team that relies heavy on teamwork and collaboration with one another. So we select a handful of representatives from our technical side of things, and also from all different types of technical, so from electric to software to mechanical, to ensure that all our spots on our drone are covered should something need to be done or fixed at the competition. And we also have individuals who are just interested to participate. For example, during domestic competitions, we always encourage our members, even general members, to come participate and get involved. So we were very successful in doing that last year when we had our competition in Quebec. And then third, of course, is the finances. And none of this is free, of course. So we, especially in the sponsorship team and obviously our logistics team, ensures that we have the financial capacity to be able to bring our drone from one place to another, or of course, bring our team members if we can, and we work obviously very hard to ensure that our financing is responsible, and that we are doing everything to our ability to make sure everyone has a good time while they're representing us from afar.
For sure. So speaking of the technology that QADT is using, are we doing very well in any aspect of the technology? Are we excelling in any particular feature or any protocol?
I think we're doing a lot of things very well, but if I had to name more specifically one aspect of our team that is quite extraordinary, it's our software. Our software is quite clean and very little bugs ever, if any, have ever had to deal in our software.
Right.
We have excellent software engineers and computer engineers who work in our programs and design code to ensure that our drone is consistently always up to date and up to standard. We've never had an issue in relation to our software, and we're very, very proud of that. Like our drone, we have some of the most talented computer engineers and some of the most talented coders that I have personally ever met. And we work in hard to ensure that our coding programs are designed to ensure that our drone is consistently communicating with us and working with us and knowing, and that we know exactly what's going on inside the system. And of course, it makes it easier when we're making software to control the drone from afar and to have our remote be able to communicate with the drone. So I would say our software team is definitely what makes us unique from other teams. I've noticed personally that other teams sometimes struggle with their software side of things.
Yeah.
So it's definitely one aspect of our team that I think is that I'm quite proud of.
Sounds wonderful and high tech. So if we talk more about the industry trends, is there any particular feature that the drone industry is very obsessed about right now, or anything that you would like to incorporate in QADT's newer models?
If I had to choose one, obviously, I think the world is going through what we like to call a green transition.
Yeah.
That means the shifting away from the ideas of petroleum and from gas, a lot of carbon emitting sources of energy. And one big thing, and we're very proud of this in QADT, is that we're running completely electrical. So our drones are electric, and we obviously are very responsible with our carbon emissions. And so our drone is completely electrical. It doesn't rely on any issues in terms of, or it doesn't rely on any carbon emitting sources of energy. Completely done in a green way, in an ethical way, in a sustainable way. Secondly, I would also say our something I would like personally to see in the upcoming years is the implementation of artificial intelligence into our drones. It'd be interesting to see if artificial intelligence can be used in a way that perhaps guides our drone in the sky without necessarily our control. Perhaps have it be able to detect forest fires or areas that are more likely to be vulnerable to forest fires, and to combat forest fires before it becomes a serious issue, like we saw not too long ago in California.
Right.
If we had drones ready in those spots that are more vulnerable for forest fires, we can easily be able to deal with forest fires. And I think artificial intelligence is something that can be very, very beneficial in that cause, should we have a strong enough database.
Yeah. Since you brought up the incident of LA fires, during the LA fire, I was seeing on the news that a lot of helicopters and smaller aircraft, such as Cessnas, are being used to pour water. Do you think a drone can do a better job in such situations?
I would say there is definitely the potential for a drone to do it better, for sure. I think I don't think we're necessarily there yet in the technology.
Okay.
I think as technology advances and more design teams and more students get more involved in these initiatives, we're going to get to a point where a drone is just as capable of fighting a forest fire compared to a helicopter. And that also means reducing costs. That also means saving human lives from being in the area of forest fires.
Yeah.
And and we're able to do it in a way that's also perhaps more efficiently and more quickly with AI. And we just don't have to bring actual human beings into those, very dangerous situations, which can save, rescuers' lives. So I think we're not just, I don't think we're right there yet, but I definitely think in the upcoming years, even perhaps this decade, but that will most definitely get there.
Right. And I hope we reach there soon. So now let's take a deeper dive at your role in QADT. Is there any specific project that you would like to complete or any task that you would want to accomplish before you step down from your role in QADT?
I got not too much time left in me. So I would say my biggest hope for the team forward is to ensure that our transitions are smooth, ensuring that the next people who take charge after me and the current team are people and individuals who have a strong understanding of their roles, a strong understanding of their responsibilities, what we did good, what we could have improved on, our connections, and so that when they take over, that they're going full steam ahead without having to necessarily ask themselves, what should I do or what should I have done? I hope that work transitions are transitions that are done in a way that is effective, communicative, and more impactful for the upcoming executive team.
Okay, so speaking of the upcoming future, how do you see QADT evolving in the next few years?
Say this, like, I think we've this year we expanded almost 200% in terms of enrollment in our team.
Right.
I think that's not changing anytime soon. I think we're going to continue to expand and continue to see more people interested in the field of aerospace. Queen's doesn't actually offer an aerospace degree, so we're pretty much the next best thing for people who are interested in aerospace. And I think as more students are aware through our marketing strategies about our team, we're going to see more interest and we're going to see more events be hosted for aerospace. Aero Expo, more specifically, is an event that Queen's has hosted in the past. I think that's something that will most definitely happen again. So to answer your question, I think we'll see a lot more students be interested in the field of aerospace because it's a great industry to be involved in. It's an industry that has a lot of potential to do a lot of things.
Right. That sounds wonderful. So speaking of people being interested in this field, let's say if any of our audience are interested in joining QADT, how can they do it?
Follow us on Instagram. It's Queens with the S. So QUEENS Aero, AERO. Follow us for Instagram and just keep being updated with our Instagram and our hiring updates. And come visit us at any point. Beamish, we're at the design bay at the very end.
Great. Thank you, Nico. Thanks for joining us. It was lovely talking to you. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thank you for having me.
And that's a wrap, folks. We were conversing about the aerospace industry with Mr. Nico. He is an aerospace enthusiast who also happens to be the business director of Queen's Aerospace Design Team.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Beginning with Monday, March 17th, a cooler day after a run of some unseasonably warm temperatures, daytime high of 4 degrees and it was sunny, going to drop down to a chilly minus 6 overnight. Tuesday, March 18th, a little bit warmer, 6 degrees and sunny, dropping down to a neutral 0 overnight. Wednesday, March 19th, it's going to be back into the double-digit temperatures, 12 degrees and sunny, dropping down to 4 overnight with a 30% chance of precipitation. Thursday, March 20th, we're going to see a daytime high of 7 degrees and there is a 60% chance of showers throughout the day. Friday, March 21st, it's going to be 3 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud. Saturday, March 22nd, a little bit warmer at 9 degrees. It will be cloudy, dropping down to as low as minus 2 overnight. Sunday, March 23rd, daytime high of 5 degrees and it will be cloudy. And Monday, March 24th, high of 7, but a 40% chance of precipitation. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report. Reminder that reduced load restrictions are in effect in Kingston as of March 1st. Heavy trucks and loads are restricted on city roads where posted. These restrictions help reduce damage to roads in the spring. A complete list of roads with restrictions can be found in the traffic bylaw section of the City of Kingston website. Road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Work is still ongoing at the Hanson Memorial parking structure. This work will take place throughout all levels of the building and will include efforts such as routine structural maintenance, repainting, replacement of waterproofing materials, and upgrades to the building's mechanical and electrical systems. The work is planned to conclude in July 2025. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Highway 2, Abidon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users and to accommodate increased traffic coming from the Wabin Crossing.
Hello, I'm Henry Walker, CFRC intern from the Queen's Department of History. Here's today's concert and events calendar. Starting with concerts, coming up on Monday, the Mahones will be playing a St. Patrick's Day concert at the Broom Factory with doors opening at 7 p.m. Tickets are available online on TicketScene. The club at the RCHA will be hosting the Dave Barton Trio from 4:30 to 6:30. There will be a $5 door charge. Also on Monday, the Mourning Doves will be playing at Musiki from 8 to 11 p.m. Tiernanog, as part of their St. Patrick's Day celebrations, will be having a number of performers on Monday afternoon, including Frank Ryan from 1 to 4 p.m., band The Fiddleheads from 5 to 8 p.m., and Kevin and the Kitchen Sink from 9 to midnight. Another spot folks can head down to for their St. Patrick's Day celebrations for some music is the Toucan between 10:30 p.m. and 2 a.m. Bands for this show have yet to be announced. This Tuesday, the RCHA will be hosting Tom's Tuesday Afternoon Happy Hour Jam starting at 4 p.m. Musiki will be hosting its free open mic from 8 to 11:30 p.m. And also, the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra will be performing Max Richter's reimagining of The Four Seasons at the Spire. Tickets are available on the Kingston Friends website for between $45 and $20. Next up, on Wednesday, musician Ariel Posen will be playing at the Broom Factory from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. Tickets are available online for $25 on Eventbrite. Also on Wednesday, Hotel Wolf Island will host its weekly open mic night starting at 8:30 with host Mike Rapkins. On Thursday, folks can head down to the Broom Factory at 7 p.m. to catch Cancer Bats, Teeth, and Mile Ant. Tickets for this concert are available for around $25 on TicketScene. Trailer Swift Band will be playing at The Buckle from 8 to 11 p.m., also on Thursday night. On Friday, Coletta and Super Yamba Band will be playing a concert at the Broom Factory from 7:30 to 10 p.m. Tickets are available for around $35 on Eventbrite. Also on Friday, the Toucan will be hosting a free acoustic evening with Johnny Kirawan running from 5 to 8 p.m. On Saturday, Devin Cole will be playing a show at the Broom Factory starting at 7 p.m. Tickets are available online for roughly $20 plus fees on TicketScene. The band Chelsea Road will be playing at the Buckle from 9 to 12:30. Also on Saturday, the band Cabbage will be returning to the Grad Club with their show starting at 8 p.m. Tickets are available online for between $15 and $20 on Eventbrite. On Sunday, folks can head down to the Buckle between 5 and 7 to catch their free open mic. Savannah Shea will be playing at Musiki between 4:30 and 6:30. And finally, Angela Hewitt will be performing at the Isabel Bader Center at 2:30 with tickets available online for between $15 and $72 on the Isabel Bader's website. Have a concert you would like to add to our online and on-air concert calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Once again, this is Henry, CFRC intern for the Department of History, continuing with this week's events calendar. On Monday, Loggers and Joggers Run Group meets at Fine Balance Brewing Company at 7 p.m. Also on Monday, both One Eye Jats and The Brass will host their weekly trivia night starting at 7:45 and 8 p.m. respectively. On Tuesday, the Kingston Market is running at Springer Market Square from 8:30 to 4 p.m. The Lululemon Weekly Fun Run meets at 270 Princess Street starting at 5:30 p.m. Also on Tuesday, Euchre Night is happening at Daft Brewing from 7 to 9 p.m. After that, on Wednesday, One Eye Jats will be hosting Board Game Night starting at 7. Additionally, The Mansion will be hosting karaoke starting at 9. The Champions of Magic show will be coming to Kingston, where they'll be performing at Slush Puppy Place starting at 5 p.m. Tickets for this show will be available on their website, championsofmagictour.com, for between $48 and $119. Also on Wednesday, both Something in the Water and Daft Brewing will be hosting their Trivia Night starting at 7 p.m. Folks can also head down to Muziki, which is hosting its weekly life drawing event. Don't forget to bring your own art supplies and $5 and participate in uninstructed life drawing. On Thursday, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Also on Thursday, the Out in Front Weekly Run Group has a public run starting downtown at 6:15 p.m. in front of Runner's Choice. All people are invited regardless of ability, sex, sexual orientation, or gender identity. Daft Ruin will be hosting its second annual, post-COVID, Kingston Young Professional Networking event on Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. This event itself is free, although it is suggested that you reserve a spot through Eventbrite. Daft Ruin will also be hosting Queerioki starting at 8 p.m. There's a $5 cover charge at the door. On Friday, The Buckle and Daft Ruin will both be hosting their weekly free karaoke nights. Doors open at 9. Also on Friday, the Frontenats will be playing the Brantford Bulldogs at Slush Puppy Place with their game starting at 7 p.m. Tickets are available online on Ticketmaster, at stores as listed on the Frontenats website, or at Slush Puppy Place itself. On Saturday, fourth-year students from Queen's University's MAPP, Media and Performance Production Program, will be performing a showcase of their culminating pieces at the Isabel Bader Center from 3 to 8 p.m. This is a free performance. Also on Saturday, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. On Sunday morning, the Runner's Choice Lawn Run starts downtown outside their store at 8:20 a.m. All ages and paces are welcome. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 1 p.m. at Memorial Center. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.